Debbie Barry.
Here.
Dan Moore.
Here.
Bruce Springer.
It's the World Series.
Three members are present, which constitutes a quorum.
Please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Can we have a motion to approve our minutes from our October 18th?
So moved. Second.
All favor. Aye. And we'll jump right to the financial report then.
Thank you, Mary. This morning, we came on our financial report through September to look at. As always, the financials are in your board packet, including not only all of the financials, but all of our accounts receivable, our investment information, all the encumbrances, and all of the project summaries. So you do have all of that detail also. This is the Reader's Digest, or the USA Reader's Digest condensed version, or the USA Today condensed version. As we work our way through this, let's start with property taxes. Currently, we are ahead of where we were expecting for this point of the year, our projection for this point of the year. We're actually at 101% of budget, so that's extraordinary. That's great. We don't have another big collection month yet coming into this year, just some small amounts that are coming in, but definitely to be above is a good thing. We look at our grants and local government. Again, as we talk about every month, this is more just a timing issue. We have over six grants right now coming in from outside sources that are over 500,000. So it's just a matter of when the project is underway, when that reimbursement request comes in, and when that goes out, rather than when that actual reimbursement comes back in. Investment income, we are over projection for this point of the year. Unfortunately, the projection wasn't very high to begin with because interest rates are so low. We are continually monitoring our investments. At the end of September, actually, we had quite a few come due. Settlement date on the reinvestment was at the beginning of October. So when you look at the detail on your October report, you'll see a lot of movement there as we move some of our investment monies into new areas. Golf receipts, we are under where we expected to be this time of the year. We've talked about the reasoning for that due to the weather, very hot August. September, beginning of October was very good for us, but unfortunately, good October day isn't as good as any day lost in August. What is positive here is that food service is well over where we thought we would be for compared to last year. And because we've been looking outside of the box, we're looking at other areas, this is definitely helping to alleviate that negative. Zoo receipts, they are over where we thought they would be for this point of the year. The other major positive that's just extraordinarily helpful in this area, zoo rentals have already exceeded their annual budgeted amount for the year, and they still have 3 months yet to come in, revenues to come in, so that's a very positive trend. Chalet restaurants, concessions, we have some, there is a negative number there, but when we look at the restaurant revenue for like East 55th, they're at 135% of their annual budget. So we definitely have some very positive messages there also. Some of them are up, some of them are down, but we do definitely, East 55th alone is definitely a positive message there. We have others that are trending that way also. Some obviously they're not trending quite as well.
Where is the biggest shrink there?
Merwin's is a little under where their estimates were for the year. Some of the other areas that we didn't quite hit our projections.
So Merlin's is one. What are some of the other ones?
The water taxi was slightly under. Those were the, it was a lot of small ones. Those were probably the two larger ones. So on the positive side, we had revenues from other areas that really, we weren't even considering. We have parking lot revenues that are coming in. We help East 55th, so those are definitely on the positive.
But the chalet is in there.
The chalet is
the
in
chalet
there.
Is.
We know that the chalet had a tough early 2016. So I don't know how to, in my mind, rectify this. Do I wish for a bad winter so the chalet and lots of snow early so the chalet has a good season, or do I not want snow because I don't like driving it? You know, but it's
saying it's an increment that just carries all the way through.
before?
Absolutely.
Because it starts at the start of the year, but it's on the annual budget, so you don't look at it, you don't get it until the end of the year. But it was we had almost no snow for the early part of the year.
No snow, and when we did have snow for them, it was a rainy snow, or it didn't stay cold enough. There was a lot of rain where they just, even if it was cold enough, it was raining, they just couldn't keep the chutes open. The other area, we do have a negative here also. Part of this is our reservation and permitting. For our reservations, for our venues, it is up over 2015. We did have a slight glitch there. This does also include permitting for the slips at the marinas. And we kind of overestimated what we thought that might be for this year. So going into next year, we'll make sure we look at that a little bit closer and make sure we're more on target with that.
If I can, just to recap
on
these ones where we have projections, I'm assuming projection is a straight geometric or arithmetic. I mean, it's much more, you assess at the end of the year and look to tweak and then make projections. That's a collective process, correct?
It is, and we're trying to balance history over time, yeah. And looking at not just a 1 or a 3 year, but trying to look at a 5 year, because we're really struggling with the weather anomalies that we continue to have. It's really hard when you're trying to budget on the weather. And for as much as we try to have, what I would say, consistency, it is not as easy as that, and it's not an exact science along the way. And I think when you look at where Merlin will actually land, I think it'll come in the black. I think the chalet, if we get a decent fall season, that will come along. Hay rides are rolled into that, balancing where all the marinas are at. We took on Emerald Necklace kind of late in the game, meaning Emerald Necklace Marina. We didn't have a lot of good history because of the way the two business units were actually split, so we tried to roll those together. So there's a lot of things that are kind of in the ingredients that I think after we get a little bit more years under our belt, we can monetize that a little bit better.
I get that, but the process itself, though, is one where it really is a collective evaluation, and so you're constantly scrutinizing to see where the downside and upsides are.
Absolutely.
Apart from the barrier.
Correct. And it's a team effort, between Lisa, Louie, Jared, Joe. All of us are trying to look at the numbers, and you're trying to hit the target. Where golf receipts are a little under, Sean's balancing his budget, where zoos push forward a little bit. Chris is still watching, his math, with the rain. So each month increment, you're trying to look at just a little bit more to see where it's going to land. If you look at grants a little bit, a lot of times you don't get to pick and choose when the money actually comes in. And so that's something we also have to budget for.
But in short, we're conscious of this. We're self-conscious.
We're very conscious.
So as we continue, move down here, we'll start looking at the expenditure side. Our salary and fringe category, we have a very positive variance. A big portion of this is due to position management savings, where it's currently got 44 positions that we are managing. Also, we have some major savings in the area of seasonals for the year. And golf, who has been watching their budget very carefully, half of our savings in seasonals is coming from the golf area for this year. Utilities, again, mostly natural gas, water, sewer, so we do have major savings there. Our capital items, we've talked about these before. These numbers are starting to hit closer to where the projections are. Obviously, some of our construction contracts, though, are multi-year contracts. We budget that out earlier in the year, not knowing exactly where that will fall or what portion will be definitely completed this year or taken into next year. But we do need to budget for it in the current year if that's when the PO is cut for. So that includes all of that. So those numbers will end up catching up. And then our self-funded reserve. We have talked about this also in prior meetings. And as we did last meeting with the health insurance renewal, our claims are running more at a normal pace where we had been running so much better than average. So we have adjusted this once this year. We are continuing to monitor it. When we get our monthly reports in on our health insurance claims, we're looking at those very closely, and there will be another adjustment in this area before the end of the year to get that budget adjustment, not including the one that we have today, but in the final one for the year.
And Karen, the savings aren't in there yet either, correct?
Correct. Those came in, I'm sorry.
Carol, right, the credits aren't in there yet.
No, they're not.
They just came in.
Okay.
Yeah, we do get credits for those funds where we've exceeded our maximum and our umbrella policy kicks in. So we do get those credits that come in, and those came in October. So you'll be seeing those in the next set of financials. So in total, there's some very positive numbers here. We will continue to monitor them as we always do going forward.
I think just to add to it, I mean, the staff, and Bruce to just kind of capstone that, the staff is doing everything they can on the expense side to manage the other side of it as well. So you'll see the pushes and pulls where we may are not hitting the target, they're trying to manage, they'll be managing on the other side as well. So we're working very consciously and making sure that the things that we put forth, we can hopefully hit those targets at the end. And sometimes you need a little bit of help from Mother Nature as well. And, I think Booth the Zoo has done very well. I think, if I'm not mistaken, on Sunday was record attendance. Is that correct, Chris? And Kelly both. I mean, it was unbelievable turnout. And so the things you're doing and some of the programs we're looking at for next year as well, I think will really help balance some of these things. So kudos to the staff that are helping manage.
I have one other question. When we look at the grants, and again, I understand the grants because of when they come in. Do we look at them and divide them 12 months equally, or do we estimate when we think they'll come in? And again, it's still not exact science.
It is more subjective than just an equal 12 months. Just on the expenditure side, we go back and we look at last year. This was the total amount of expenditures for September last year. We were at this amount. We use that same percentage on this year's budget for our projections. So we do try to do it that way. And if they're bigger grants and we know that maybe later in the year, we try to adjust those also.
But being almost $6 million off there,
right?
Is that, can we make that up before the end of the year?
We may not get those revenues in before the end of the year, but they will be coming in next year then.
Yeah.
It is just timing on that, and we're okay with that. Question. Yeah, exactly, we're okay with that there. These are definite grants, definite funding commitments that we have that are in place, so we know those monies are coming in.
It's not whether it's when.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And sometimes it's a matter of finishing the report, finishing the project, and then doing, because we, a lot of times, end up fronting on a lot of those big grants. We front, and then we have to get reimbursed on the back side. So it's a double push on some of those.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, let's move on to the new business.
Very good. Well, it is World Series time. Fall baseball is a lot of fun. And, it's very, very exciting for the community. And we're also celebrating this morning Judy Forrester and her more than 33 years of dedicated service to Cleveland Metro Parks.
Good morning, Commissioners. How are you?
Well, I have the honor of introducing you to Judy, and for saying a few kind words of her for her 33 years plus of service with Cleveland Metro Parks. And throughout those years, she has served in a lot of different diverse capacities. And she first began working at the Rocky River Stables, where she was a hostler, and she worked with the horses and with staff and led various trail rides, and then later transitioned over into park operations, where she worked actually for the CMEA for a while in both our Big Creek and Little Creek One reservations. And when I spoke with her about her experience here, she kind of talked a lot about having the opportunity to work on and supplement the reservation tree crews, and also learn how to operate a backhoe.
Yeah.
And later,
in a big field with no wires around.
Later on, she moved into some support roles as far as administrative support, and that's where she's at now, as administrative coordinator. And that's where Judy and I really have worked a lot more closely, as when I was promoted into the director's position about 4 years ago. Prior to that, Judy served one director and other support staff around. Now she supports three directors of parks, works with our park managers and other administrators on an as-needed basis. And all the while doing that, she's been very steadfast with the work that she does. And I just can't say enough about how she's been kind of a check and a balance for all of us to make sure that we are on time. So as far as scheduling of appointments between divisions across departments and with outside folks for data collection that we need to keep track of things, for updating all of our documents, which CAP is so much more important. We regularly update things, and she also is very, very vigilant with ourselves and our managers to make sure that our reports and things that we need to have turned in are done so completely and timely. And I have to say with Judy, I often think that sometimes you forget about how important one is that which supports you, and you kind of overlook that. And it hasn't been until more recently that as her retirement's come near, that I think my eyes, as well as many others, have been opened so much by just what she's done for us and how she's contributed to us in this agency to make us so much better. And for that, I want to thank you for your time.
Along with
service.
All other support staff. Yeah. Rob Ross supports this. Yes.
I want to wish you well on retirement, so thank you.
Thank you. I am very grateful.
Fantastic. On behalf of, you don't get to get away quite yet. On behalf of Judge Anthony J. Russo, the Board of Park Commissioners, we'd like to give you this resolution recognizing your more than 33 years of service to Cleveland Metro Parks. And again, thank you for all you have done to keep Metro Parks great. Thank you. Okay. Recognizing Judy Forrester for her more than 33 years of service to Cleveland Metro Parks falls in the middle portion of page 4.
Move the motion.
Second.
The next is budget adjustment number 3. This is an appropriation of type 2. It's just an adjustment of restricted funds. It is an increase of $195,871 due to some grants and or donations to come in. Resolutions on page 5, top portion.
Move the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next we have is the 2016 property and liability insurance coverages. With us this morning, we have our Director of Risk Management, Greg Headley, and he has done an excellent job managing a very arduous process to work through our premiums, market reviews, and the background. He is with him a few of his associates coming from Jackson Beacon, which he'll cover, and then we'll just kind of walk through and get through the recommended action, because there's a whole bunch of things that are tied to it. Greg?
Thank you, Brian. Good morning. As Brian stated, we do have our annual renewal, our insurance renewal in front of you. As you'll remember, we have a three-year program. We'll be entering the third year of a three-year program, which means next year we're going out to public bid. We do have Jackson Deacon here with us today. They're our broker, Kelly McKeon and Carly. Stand up quite a few years we've been working with them. They're quite an asset and resource for us when we're going through this process. Our insurer is Tokyo Marine HCC, and they work very closely with them, coming up with our premiums and our coverages. Also, we have another set of eyes on this, as usual, from Crane Lander. They're here at Kincaid, and working with Gary and Dan Buser, great asset for us as well. They have a lot of experience in the public realm. This is very important for us to go ahead and confer with them whenever we're looking at these coverages. Getting now to kind of the bottom line, we do have an increase, not unexpected. So we have about $40,000 over last year that we're looking at a premium of $767,000. Most of that is due to property. Increases in our values of our current inventories, and then also some of those construction projects that we've been looking at, specifically Tiger Passage. That was the real driver of our increase at this point. The good news is, more good news actually, our rates did not increase. Our losses are really, really low. We have a 2% loss ratio, which is something that our insurer will look at when they're assessing how much premium to charge us. Our property rates have stayed the same as well. We haven't had any very big losses there. You can see lots of items there. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
What does a 2% loss ratio mean?
It's a big formula that they put in. A lot of things go into that formula, and I can get you the specifics on that from our underwriters. But they are looking at how many losses we had in the previous policy year, along with some amplifiers and things like that they put in. And then looking at our losses are very, very low, about $80,000, I believe, in losses last year. However, most of that was handled on our self-insured retention. So that came out of risk management budget. Insurance only really paid $2,000 out of their kind of pocket. We paid the rest in risk management. So obviously very, very low. our rate increases don't kick in until we get to a certain percentage. I believe it's 32%. So we're at 2%. That's pretty good. Not even close to that 32%.
The question I would have is, so you're saying only 2%, or maybe I'm misunderstanding this, 2% of our $700,000 premium were losses. Is that what I understand?
It's a little more complicated than that. Of our $80,000 in losses, 2%, that does come to about 2% of whatever our premium is, yes. I think it really comes out of our premium for last year, I believe, was $747,000. So yeah, they do take a look at that, what we're covered for, and spit it into the equation, and then that's a fair assessment that 2% of that premium is really what was paid out, basically, from them.
So we're really insuring against a huge casualty, right?
Yes, depending on what the coverage is. Our general liability, we are, absolutely. And we also have an excess liability coverage of $10 million. So yeah, we need to be able to cover those catastrophic losses, fire, flood, those sorts of things are really what we're concerned about, absolutely.
Okay, I understand.
Recommend action if there are no further questions. It starts on the top quarter of the lower portion of page 5 and continues through the bottom part of page 6 into 7.
I move the motion.
Seconded.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is the authorization of the land acquisition through NHFL Land and Water Conservation Fund, and it's also a partnership with the Western Reserve Land Conservancy. Kyle, there's Kyle. Kyle's just going to give us a quick breakdown of this. This actually came through again the Western Reserve Land Conservancy, working with the mayor over in the city of Brentsville. Just a couple quick highlights of the attributes of the property.
Yeah, this is a really exciting partnership that we have to acquire this property. I believe it's valued at $5.5 million. So it's a 102-acre property in southern Brecksville on Parkview Road. The way this is kind of, Western Reserve came to us with this opportunity. Developer purchased the property about a decade ago, Dino Palmieri, his group, to put homes in there. Through a bunch of different reasons, they were unable to do the development, and the developer is willing to donate a portion of it to Western Reserve and then accept about $2.5 million for the property, take a write-off on the $3 million difference. So Western Reserve will put forth an application to Clean Ohio for $2.2 million with the $2.5 million. We are supporting them in that application. And then we will also, the Metro Parks will submit an application to the Land and Water Conservation Fund for $300,000, which would basically cover the entire purchase price of the $2.5 million. Metro Parks has agreed to be the backstop for that Land and Water Conservation Fund grant. So, you know, the largest amount of money that Metro Parks would pay for this property would be $300,000. There's a very good chance that we would pay nothing in land acquisition land acquisition expenses to acquire this property. So it's a really great opportunity to get $5.5 million valued in property for, you know, just title insurance and closing costs. So that's what the opportunity is. And we're really confident that we can get the Land and Water Conservation Fund and the Clean Ohio funds to acquire this property.
Two questions you can answer. One, do you know who did the appraisal in five? Do we know?
I believe it was Paul Van
Curen.
Van Curen? I
believe it's Lobby, but.
Yeah, and it's in Western Reserve's name right now.
Yeah, and you said there were a number of problems with the development. Would any of them have to do with zoning and Grasso?
I think that's the largest thing, is that it requires, I believe it's a vote. So that was some of the hurdles associated with developing the property.
And was this all the property they said, or did you say that they had more property, you know, and they ended up doing a portion of it?
No, it's the entire property. They're taking $3 million in donation off there.
Got it, off there. Okay. Thank you.
There's also, so $300 towards the acquisition. We'll also put $24 total towards restoration. There are a structure or two on there that would need to be removed from the property as well. We'll also look at a long-term strategy of the possible connection points up into the Brecksville Reservation and or into the Cuyahoga Valley National Park to link these pieces of property. So again, a very unique piece of property, very creative way to finance 102 acres, and the recommended action falls on the mid-portion of page 8.
Yeah, fabulous. So moved.
Seconded.
All in favor?
All right.
The next one we have is the authorization of Clean Ohio Conservation Fund. This is the Hemlock Creek over in the Bedford Reservation. This is a unique, again, another unique opportunity to pick up two parcels of land. We've worked with the mayor of Walton Hills. We've worked with the families of the Krakowskis. It happens to be two sisters. We're working on a total project of $250,000. Again, this is through the Clean Ohio Conservation Fund program. We're also looking at a strategy. There's one infill. We have been trying diligently to pick that one up. We have not been successful at this point in time, but the recommended action to purchase these properties to Clean Ohio falls in the bottom portion of page 9.
So moved. Second.
All in favor?
The next is an authorization to accept the grant application commitment funds. This is a long highlighted challenge that we're faced with in homeowners and communities due to the ash mortality through the over 175 ash trees have been taken down from throughout Big Creek. We're actually looking at replanting. We've got a Forest Service grant for $99,000. We'll be matching that with some funds from Cleveland Metro Parks and labor. But we will be working very diligently on planting 180 large caliper trees, 450 small 3-gallon trees throughout a number of areas through Big Creek and Gordon Park reservations. And this is a very great opportunity to start the reforestation project through the Emerald Ash Borer Challenge. Recommended action is on the bottom portion of page 10.
So moved. Second.
All in favor?
The next one starts on page 11. This is the operating agreement between the Cleveland Metro Parks Zoo and the Cleveland Zoological Society, a long-standing relationship. Liz Fowler, Liz is here as well. This has been a great relationship for quite a number of years. It dates back way back to 1998. We did do some tweaking back in 2013. We're proposing to keep this the same with an extension that will continue through 2017. Again, allowing the zoo to receive some greater revenues, facilitate continued growth, and we have projects coming online moving forward. So to continue this one-year relay, or this again for another year, falls on the bottom portion of page 11 to continue with the arrangement with the Cleveland Zoological Society.
Move the motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next action item falls on the top portion of page 12 and goes through. I think Rose will be able to just highlight a few of the very pertinent details. And we'll go from there.
Thank you, Brian. As commissioners, this is the matter. As a result of the statutory changes, all public entities had to give notice to individuals who had served as independent contractors an opportunity to file a claim that they, in fact, were an employee instead of an independent contractor. And we did have an individual come forward who filed the claim, and it was Joe Fian, who served as in providing prosecutorial services for the Cleveland Metro Park since 1965, except for 2 years, from 1975 to 1977. So we have responded to his claim, and this has been going on since 2015. In the first two rounds with OPERS, our facts have substantiated that, in fact, he was an independent contractor and not an employee. We were successful with that matter, and he did have an opportunity to appeal that decision, though, through the administrative process at OPERS. The final decision came out in October of 2015, so last year, again, in our favor. He had 60 days to appeal, so the appeal should have come in December 30th of 2015. The appeal did not come in. And then in the spring, however, we were surprised to learn that he did file an appeal and OPERS had granted an extension, unbeknownst to us. We had not received notice of his appeal, nor did OPERS let us know that they were granting an extension for this appeal. So we, through a public records request, have been gathering more facts regarding how this has happened procedurally. And we currently have a motion to dismiss the case that is pending in front of the administrative law judge. We've got an indication that that motion will be denied and the hearing will go forward. And that's why we're coming to you with this extraordinary measure to initiate litigation so that we can have this procedural issue reviewed before this case moves forward. So we're not sure how successful it will be, but we believe that procedurally We have all the facts which demonstrate that the appeal was not filed timely, and therefore this matter should have ended last December. So request that we're asking for is that you authorize us to initiate litigation in the form of a writ of mandamus or a writ of prohibition, any other legal instrument that we may use to move forward with the litigation.
Move the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you very much. There are no tabulation of award and bids. Do you guys do anything?
I was a series.
Very good. Approval of vouchers and payroll.
Thank you. Resolution 16-10170. The following vouchers have been reviewed as to legality of expenditure in conformity with the Ohio Revised Code.
Move to accept.
Second.
All favor. We have with us two employee guests this morning who have come in to help out the legal division of those.
Thank you. Kyle, why don't you start with Barbara?
So I'll introduce Barbara with us. Come on up here. Barbara was nervous about this, so put her on the spot. So about a year ago, we reached out to our legal assistance agency, and a legal assistant was sent to us. And her name is Barbara Lucas, and she's done a wonderful job in some pretty tough circumstances for us and got a lot of work done, and everyone likes her. And we said, wow, we need a legal assistant full-time to handle real estate issues and public records requests, which have been on the uptick. And we thought it'd be good to have a person who was kind of in charge of that. So, you know, we put it out for people to apply, and Barbara rose to the top, largely based on the experience that we previously had with her. And she has worked for alphabet soup of law firms throughout her career in Cleveland. She also most recently was at RTA in their legal department. Barbara has been a great asset to us, and she's wonderful to have around. And I'd like to introduce her to the board.
Thank you, Kyle. Well, it was a welcome change for me to leave the concrete jungle of Cleveland and come over to a park. I enjoy working here, learning my new job, getting to know my coworkers. The camaraderie in this building is amazing. I work with a kind and intelligent group of individuals.
That's the love of her.
And I'm just happy to be here, and I enjoy working here tremendously. Proud to be part of this organization. And just thank you, Brian and commissioners, for having me here today.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you. Brittany also doesn't like to be the focus of attention, so I'm going to let you stay there, Britt. but please do. We won't let you off that. So Brittany is a graduate of Kenyon College, and she went to New York City right after her graduation from Kenyon, and she worked there for 8 years for a prominent law firm. And as you see from the write-up, she was promoted several times and had a lot of responsibility. But she made the absolutely best decision of her life that she'll tell you. She decided to come back home to Cleveland, which Cleveland rocks and is better than New York City. As soon as she started working with us, she hit the ground running. And Brittany is such a high performer and so diligent. And both Barbara and Brittany are quiet workhorses that get so much work done for us, and so we're so pleased to have both of them on our team. Thank you, Brittany.
I've really enjoyed my time here so far. It's 150 times better than working at a law firm in New York City. I didn't realize how stressed and unhappy I was when I was there, but coming here and everyone's so nice, the work environment is so different. Everyone is happy. There's a good work-life balance, so that has been a very welcome change. So I really enjoy working here so far, and I'm excited to continue.
Thank you.
The next info item we have is the Brecksville Nature Center Auxiliary Building. Wendy was out of her seat before I had it. I think she's very excited.
You haven't been to this building, and you should. Has everybody been to this building?
Yes.
What?
Yes.
is the last remaining trailside museum. So, you know, we had one in North Chagrin, we had one in Rocky River that both burned down. This is the last remaining one from 1939 WPA. You have to go and see it. But it is lovely. And it's chestnut sandstone. When you walk up to it, it's this long walk up to it. This sets the scene of coming to a place to learn about nature. I mean, it is nature. But it's tiny. It's just this tiny little place. And so we do great things there. Let me make sure my little thing goes here. No? Oh, good, good, good. That's IT for you. Turn that on. Good. So it's a tiny, tiny little building. So when we have a program and you are doing the program, visitors walk in to see the snake or to see the exhibit or to talk to the staff, and they feel like they're intruding. They feel like, oh, geez, there's a group of kids here and I don't want to get in the way. So it doesn't feel very welcoming. You want to be there, but there's a group of kids there. So when we do programs during business hours, which is 7 days a week, 9 to 5, that can be a problem. So if we do programs at night, after hours, we've got a little more ability to take up the whole space and not feel like people are intruding. So we do that. We have lots of programs in the evenings and obviously after hours, but it becomes, we don't get to do all the things we want to do. So when we have large groups that come, so one of the things I'll tell you, the school buses now carry 2 and 3 classes of kids. And they're generally not bringing just one class of kids, they're bringing 3 classes. So we have to introduce our programs in 3 different locations because we don't want to do a group of 90 school children because nothing good happens from that. So we split it up and it's cumbersome. So if we have a day like today, what do you do? You know, and the kids are still coming. The schedules are so tight, they're mostly not canceling. But it becomes an issue. So we introduce it outside, we split everybody up. It becomes a situation where we just do our best. We do our best. And we want to show people that building. It's a beautiful, beautiful building. But in terms of these large school groups, it becomes a thing. The other issue that we're dealing with is that, with these 90 school kids there, and everybody has to go to the bathroom because they're there for at least an hour and a half, probably 3 hours. And if a half an hour of that program is taken up by standing in line for our beautiful vault toilets, then that's just not great. So that becomes a sensory experience that we don't really want the kids to have. So we're happy to have the opportunity for this project to offer a separate building, an auxiliary building, where we can split the groups up. Again, we know that the wow is outside. We are spending most of the time outside with the kids, but there are times we have to be inside and do certain inside things. So we're happy to be able to split, to have a space to bring kids in, to introduce the program, or if we're having a large event like our Fall Fest event, which attracts over 7,000 people, and we need to set up for that event the week ahead of time, there's nowhere to do that currently. It's really difficult. Again, we're kind of getting everything staged inside of this nature center where people are visiting. So having an auxiliary building will help us spread out a little bit, have a place to actually store some materials. And so we've got some storage, we've got some space to gather. We have volunteers that we can't do our volunteer appreciation in any sort of weather. We have to do it in the summer in a shelter because they can't fit in the building. So these are good problems to have. We're not complaining. One of the things we'd love to have is a resource where we can spread out a little bit. Again, the auxiliary building we're talking about will have an area to split down the middle so you can actually have 2 classrooms in there and 1 class in the Nature Center. So this building would not be close to, I'm going to let Ryan talk about it, it's not exactly going to be close to the Nature Center. As you walk up to this historic building, we want you to have that experience of going back in time, and we wouldn't want to detract by having our new building right exactly next to it. So we want to make sure we're cognizant of that. But the plans call for an additional at least 1 vault toilet, so at least we'll get the kids shuttled through those restrooms faster. So we're excited about that too. I'm going to show less enthusiasm for that, but we're excited about that too. So anyway, I'll let Ryan talk to you more about the design of the proposed building, and if you have questions, you can answer afterwards.
Thank you, Wendy. Good morning, everyone. I guess I should have gone and seen the building before I started. No, actually, we've been working very hard.
Carol Glennystein, Natural Resources, Building Trades, you know, the real collaborative effort. And you hear me say collaborative several times throughout this, and that's the goal for what we want to do here. In working through... Wrong way? Okay. In working with, through several meetings, site visits, we've kind of settled on an area that's just north of the existing nature center, kind of south of the Harry Keeler Shelter House, which again is another fabulous structure that we have down there in Brecksville, and then again just to the east of the Tallgrass Prairie. We have an area of existing red pines, and Natural Resources indicated these red pines are non-native to the area, and they're also ending the end of their life cycle. So they're starting to fall down. They would like to start to take these down. So this gives us a unique opportunity to kind of introduce a building and minimize any impact on the surrounding natural resources. There we go. Okay, so as we zoom in a bit here, you'll see the proposed building located in this wooded area. It's on the northern end of this wooded area, and this location has several reasons why we kind of honed in and selected this. One of the main ones, that, like Wendy said, is you visitors arrive, they walk down the path towards the existing nature center, and this new building does not deter from their attention. That's still the focus, and that's the whole point. Additionally, it addresses the Tallgrass Prairie and allows us to possibly expand that and bring that up and kind of bridge these two natural landscapes. And also, there's an existing clearing between the prairie and another wooded area that would allow us to put a temporary construction road in to minimize any impact on visitors during construction. So we can keep the nature center, we can keep the paths up running, and really not detract from visitation.
How far, what's the distance from the current nature center to the proposed?
It's approximately 200 feet, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's good. Okay, it looks further than that on the map.
Correct. And
200 feet.
Yeah, it's pretty short.
Okay.
Yes, staff has to walk about 170 feet from the building to the restroom. We figured that out. That's how far the cordless phone reaches.
Brian's getting a tutorial on the remote.
I don't know how to work a remote. and this is the outdoor toilets area that we're going to add in the future, additional toilets, and try to make it less, hey, welcome here to our toilets. It's more hidden with some landscaping, some other features. Okay, conceptually, we came up with a plan, an open space that could seat approximately 40 to 70 people. The space, like Wendy said, will be used for informational gatherings, educational experiences before a hike. We'll have some storage area, potentially have a space that's divided, and also have a covered area, so if you have students there for a field trip, they can go outside, they can have lunch, and actually enjoy the outdoors. As I mentioned earlier, collaborative, we're bringing approximately $420,000 for a project budget. We're hoping or approaching potentially half of private funding and half of capital budget. Additionally, we're bringing a collaborative effort between contractors and our skilled trades, looking to use those great talents of building trades and site work to kind of do what they do best here and also keep the project costs down.
So the architecture was done in-house?
Yes, by me.
Oh, okay. He can draw better than he can run the house.
That's right. So aesthetics, like Wendy said, the Nature Center is a real gem there. So is the Harry Keeler Shelter House. So we want to do something that doesn't detract from that and pull some of those aesthetics over. So this is the conceptual rendering of the building, pulling in that stone, pulling in that woodwork, that shake roof, some of the architectural architectural elements like the entrance pergola, and again bridging that gap between the Tallgrass Prairie and the wooded area.
And will this building be open when people approach it, or only open when there's groups that are scheduled to be in there?
I believe it will only be open when groups are scheduled.
Only open for programs, so you have to have a purpose for being there.
Gotcha.
I think it's a beautiful, it just looks like an absolute wonderful place, and it's obviously needed. And I love the way you sort of captured the WPA CCC approach to making things. In this next administration that's about to start, there's going to be a huge emphasis on job training and internships. And I think it would be kind of interesting early in the game to run this in front of the new administration of the Clinton crowd. They were very interested in this kind of stuff.
Has the election already been held?
I like it.
I'm just clarifying because I may have missed that.
The point I'm making is we could, you know, the WPA built this place, a lot of it, and this is going to come back. And I think if we could be at the front of the line, it would be an interesting approach. My company is doing a lot of work with them on this. And I, you know, this is the perfect kind of project.
We like that. I mean, I think it's looking at where it came from, how the building was built, how a lot of the park system actually evolved in its 100 years. And again, I think Ryan and the team really put forth a great effort of trying to pull all of those things together. So we'll stay tuned until after the election, and we'll find out what administration we'll be working with, and we'll go from there.
It is.
Now, if we were playing cards, you just got to try.
We will move into the next information briefing. It's just an update on Moline, Ohio, accounts receivable. This is about the fifth project that we've done. And again, I think it's just when we looked at our strategic plan and we've looked at how we've done things for a number of years over a number of administrations, sometimes you ask the question is why we are doing some of the process that we do. And this is not necessarily casting any dispersion. It's just a matter of really going in and looking at how we're actually doing our business. And this is another great example. Karen and her team are very proud of the work that they've done in the finance department. And I will turn it over to her to give just a brief update.
Thank you, Brian. Commissioners, we are absolutely thrilled to be able to present this to you. The process, the results have been amazing. And it's just been an amazing thing. So we're really happy to bring this together today. The finance department kind of, and not just the finance department, we have people from other teams from other departments on this team also. We kind of approached our process a little bit different than some of the other Lean Ohio projects have gone. We certainly did a one full week immersion into the project, let's solve it and let's move forward. And because we were able to do that, it gave us a great opportunity to work with a gentleman named Steve Wall, who was the one who brought the Lean Ohio concept to the state of Ohio. So not only was he a huge expert in the field, but he understood government. And that was a huge... He had some experience in how government works.
Nobody understands.
Okay. He had vast experience in how government works. I'll rephrase that. And that was a huge benefit to us because government is different. Our team leader today is unfortunately out, but we're going to approach this presentation the same way we approach the project as a team. So giving the presentation today, we have Jerry Madsen, our administrative assistant, Jackie Hahn, our revenue specialist, and Sarah Brem, our accountant. The three of them are going to walk us through the process and our results.
Be careful of that.
Yeah, I know.
Did you do training? New training?
We did yesterday and okay. Didn't have any luck, actually. So, good morning, commissioners. Thank you for having us. Good morning, everybody. Karen said, I am Sarah Brem. I'm the accountant here, and we are very excited to have gone through this process and finally be sharing our results and experience with you. So, first things first, why did we choose accounting season? Well, we were asked individually if we could change any process in the department, which process would that be? And overwhelmingly, we chose accounts receivables. It's been growing tremendously. In 2015, we distributed 50% more invoices than 2014. So with that kind of growth, we really needed to get a standardized process going. And with that said, I'm going to hand it over to Jackie, and she's going to kind of get us started with all of that.
Good morning. Thank you. I'm Jackie Hahn. I work in finance as the revenue specialist. As Sarah mentioned, we chose the accounts receivable process. We knew the process was broken and needed to be repaired. With the organization growing significantly in recent years, we wanted to implement, put in play a process that would adapt to the growing needs and demands. With that being said, our focus was to break down the status quo, eliminate the band-aids and the workarounds, and really drill down to the nuts and bolts to improve, streamline, and eventually perfect the process. We started off by handpicking a diverse group of employees who had hands-on experience with the current accounts receivable process. We needed the right people in the room. We knew their field experience, input, and opinions would be crucial to making the process a success. Our goals were pretty simple. It was, one, reduce the time and material it takes to generate an invoice. Two, reduce the number of people involved in the process. And three, reduce the number of people following up on payments.
How could it take a month to get an invoice if your proposal?
The process was that broken. Part of the problem was there wasn't just one process. We had several processes under the and no one had a full understanding, and I'm hoping I'm not stealing somebody's thunder.
Go back one slide.
Nobody had a full understanding of what the whole process was. So it'd be the time for the individual department to gather the information, get it up to us, get us the background information that we need, and then make sure that we had everything in order to be able to get that invoice actually out and get it on our accounts receivable summary for you guys.
And having a goal of 2 to 4 weeks for an invoice.
Well, we were also trying to be realistic, knowing that if we can cut what we have in half, we've greatly exceeded those results. So when you get to the end, it's much better than the 2 to 4 weeks. Yes, you just stole my thunder. So, but we were trying to be realistic also into going into this, is making sure that we knew that we weren't over. We weren't being too idealistic of where we needed to go. Yes, absolutely, you would like mediation around, but knowing that the information has to come in from the department, make sure that we have all the information we need, sometimes that slows the process down.
Sometimes you need that.
Good morning, commissioners. I'm Jerry. I am administrative assistant to Karen, our CFO. I'm going to read because. So in order to reach our goals that Jackie just mentioned, our group used a lean tool called the Kaizen event. Kaizen is a Japanese word that means to break down or destroy for the better good. The purpose of this week-long Kaizen event was to access our current process by making the invisible visible, not jumping to any conclusions or solutions until everybody was on the same page and understood the process from beginning to end, and to use the consensus and data that we came to make our decisions. To make the invisible visible, and determine our baseline data, we used another lean tool called the process map. This here was our process map. This process map helped us to understand our current state and to ID waste, insufficiencies, non-valued added activities, and poor workflow. What we found was that we had 6 separate...
It's tricky.
Yeah. And I'm shaking so it doesn't help. But, these are 6 separate, unique, individual processes, because everybody wanted to have their own. Golf one and theirs, they were special, Zoo was special.
Well, they are special. Nature,
everybody was special, and everybody wanted their own special process. There were tremendous duplication and efforts. We used 4 separate databases. We wasted
kind of
time. There was tremendous waste in materials and papers and time. It was hard to determine the status of any invoice at any given point or time. So when Brian would ask, have they paid this? We'd say, okay, wait a minute, and take us a week to get back to him. It wasn't clear ever where the status was. Oh, this here step also, this here process that we mapped out, we had 60 steps in it.
That's wonderful. Wow.
Six processes, six unique processes, 60 steps for it. The next step was to do a clean sheet redesign. So we were divided into three groups. So our team was divided into three groups, separated, and we had to come up with a brand new process that would be the ideal process in a perfect world. So we were separated, and when we reconvened, we all explained our processes, and it was all three groups had the exact same process with just a few tweaks. And some of our common ideas was that the managers create their own invoices. We didn't need four separate databases to get rid of paper. Information was only to be typed or one time, and to combine all six unique processes to one standardized process. So here was our, So here's our process before and our process after. We got it down to one standardized process with nine steps. So for me, when I think of this process that we did, it was truly a transformation. We have our process here before. Well, yeah, he got the job done. He went from here to here. He might have had to stop and rest in between. And it might have taken him a couple weeks to get there. But now we're here. Our lean, mean invoicing machine, who gets there quite quickly. And I don't think that had it not been that we did the Kaizen event and took a whole week off-site to concentrate on this, we would still be at this process here.
Wow.
So it's truly, it was really a transformation.
Very good.
So what improvements did we make? Well, on September 1st, our accounts receivables process went completely electronic. Requests for invoices came from location managers, and they did that through the Cleveland Metro Parks portal. That information then populated a invoice. That invoice is then sent to the finance department electronically for our review. It is then emailed to the customer. So there's no more envelopes, no more making copies of copies, no more stamps, it's all electronic. And what's really great about this process is that the customers seem to be right on board with us in our efforts of conservation. We've done 75 invoices since September 1st. We've only had one request for a paper copy to be mailed. So why is this beneficial? Well, for one, now we have all of our accounts receivables and our invoicing being funneled through the portal and the finance department, so we have a more clear, reliable accounts receivables number that we can report on. There is less time waiting. It used to take a week for a request for an invoice to get from the manager to the finance department, and then it would take a week for the finance department to actually create the invoice, and then we would put the invoice into the mail system, and that's why sometimes it would take 5 to 8 weeks to actually get an invoice through. Now we are sending invoices out as soon as the same day it's requested and receiving payment as quickly as the same week. There is obviously less duplication of effort, so we are able to save that time. There is a clear standardized process that everyone understands. There has been no pushback from the field. It seems like they were waiting along right with us, telling us, hey, this process is broken. It's been clear, it's standardized, and it's easy for them. And on top of that, we've learned a lot of tools through this that we're going to be able to use going forward throughout our career to kind of look at other processes and improve those. So let's do the math. We moved from six separate methods to complete an invoice, depending on what type of invoice it was, and we are now down to one standardized method. We've reduced paper an estimated 90% by moving to electronic distribution. We have a projected saving of over 250 annual staff hours, which we can now redeploy, and we've streamlined the process going from 60 steps down to 9.
Yes, you.
60 down to 9, I mean, I'm a new parent, so imagine having a toddler in your potty training, the bathroom is 60 steps, or it's 9. It's a big difference.
We seem to be getting that.
I think Wendy started it.
I'm trying to just wrap it all up so it's consistent. So with any improvement and any process change, any successful project, we need support, we need help in order to get it to where it needs to be. So thank you, Brian, for allowing us to step away for 40 hours and focus on this. We didn't have to do the Band-Aids anymore. We really got down and dirty and got this process fixed. Thank you to all the chiefs for allowing your employees to participate in Lean Ohio and also to participate in this project specifically. We can't do it without the next...
You're supposed to.
We got a lot of business lessons.
Oh, don't steal my thunder. Come on.
I was trying to reduce the numbers.
Our subject matter experts, a lot of things look good on paper, but if we actually didn't have people from the field helping us with this process, it may not have gone as smoothly as it has. The entire finance staff, not just the ones involved, but the ones who had to stay behind and man the department, thank you. I also want to take a moment to actually thank Karen Fagan because she has really led the way in increasing our growth not only as a department but as individuals professionally. So thank you very much for allowing us to participate in programs like this. And the inventor of post-it notes, I don't know if you saw those processes, but we had to go through a lot of post-it notes to get there. So thank you to, I believe, those three individuals. Questions, comments?
That's
I have a question. Did you realize you were so frustrated before you went through the process, or is it now like, holy cow?
I didn't realize that everybody was frustrated with the process. I knew I was frustrated, but then when you actually have everybody who's involved in the process say this is the part I know, we were all frustrated.
That's a
great story. No, it was broken. You didn't know how badly it was.
Yes.
I've got a question. What is the next project now?
Right now, we're a little busy with this thing called software implementation. So in that step, we're going to sit down, and the goal, hopefully, then, is to look at the finance department and see if annually, if there's one thing that we can do to change, if there's one improvement we can make. Park-wide or district-wide, we have, I think, five.
Hey, we're going through HR, we're going through fleet management. I think the interesting, and I thank you very much for the presentation. They're all new presenters, and they did an amazing job. And you can't be just, you know, we're doing a lot of great things, but you can't be afraid of actually, again, taking a look at process and be a little bit disruptive. And just because it was going the way it was doesn't mean it was the right way to do it. And so this is really showing team members that took a very concerted effort and took a long process, no different than Dave Donner with the golf reservation system having to go in and out of computer systems. We took that process down. So we are going to continue to look at how we're doing business at Cleveland Metro Parks, again, through HR, through finance, through this work. We have a lot of people that are going through the lean training. And we've been very thankful. Governor Kasich's administration through the Lean Ohio office has afforded us this ability and scholarships to help pay for partnerships with Baldwin Wallace, Cuyahoga Community College, and bringing experts in to help us walk through the process because we can't do it alone. And it's interesting how you know one little bit but not the next and not the next, and you don't know how it comes out at the end. All of a sudden you start putting it all together and it's like, wow, we can really take 60 to 9? That's a big deal. So that's what we're going to continue to work on. The next information briefing item we have is the park apps of Northeast Ohio. Pat Lorch is with us this morning. He's our manager of field research. Again, I think we started off with the words collaboration, and this is Cuyahoga Valley, Kent State. This is a whole group of people putting things together. So, Pat, take it away.
Thanks. I'm excited to have an opportunity to present what is essentially an experiment that we're doing with Kent State and the National Park to explore the role of smartphones in parks. And It's a big team. This is just to show that a number of faculty members and grad students at Kent State. Jenny Vazarelli, who's chief of interpretation at the park, she's really concentrating on the educational aspects of this. I'm concentrating more on the citizen science and the getting data from users. And then there are two interns who were paid entirely by the grant for the last two summers. One worked at the park, one worked for us. So this is a GPS-enabled mobile application project, and the idea is that it's going to add value to visitor experience in two ways. It's going to provide a kind of immersive, informal learning experience using just-in-time information, and that just-in-time information is based on GPS points. So what it provides to the park is a way to quickly add information, put it in front of people without having to, for example, put a sign out, and also to ask them questions at any point in the park, which I think is really an interesting aspect of this. We can then get information on what visitors are interested in, what they're learning, because we have answers to the questions and we know where they walked. So this is an opt-in, log-in type of app, which gives us information that we can't get from the Trails app, for example.
So communication, you know where the person is at the time.
If they are logging in, yes, and they can do it without logging in, but if they log in, part of the terms of logging in is that we're getting information on where they go, and that's anonymized so that we don't, you know, have to worry about that. So the features of the app without logging in include a park map, which is basically, it's entirely based on Steve's Trails app. He provided all the data and a lot of help to get this part of it working. Then, because the whole, I mean, you basically have to have a map in an app like this so that people aren't having to switch to something else to find their way around. The other components, Adventure Tracks and Learn As You Go, the first two features, are education-oriented features aimed at giving the user those experiences that I described earlier. And then Citizen Science and Identify are things where we get information back. And those are still under development, so I'm going to focus on the first two to give you an idea of how this works. So if you Learn As You Go are basically pop-ups. They're Easter eggs that you encounter as you walk around the park. If you string some
real
of those
Easter eggs?
No, not quite, but the idea is that you discover them as you walk around. You can string those together into a track and do a kind of more guided walk, and that's what Adventure Tracks are. I'm going to show you that example because it's a little bit more full-featured. If you click on Adventure Tracks, you see a screen like this, which has a scrollable list, and I've focused on three that are actually in our park system. There are others that are in the national park. If you click on the Watershed Stewardship Center challenge there, you get a figure like this. So you get a little bit of introductory information, and then you have some idea of where you're going to walk. That green icon would be bouncing, so you'd know that that's where you're going to start. Now you can put your phone away, and as you walk toward that point, when you get within this little geofence here, your phone's going to ding and buzz, and you'll know, okay, there's an information item there. So the information item looks like this. I mean, this is one example. You have lots of different question types. One of the interesting things is there's a show question picture, so you're sure you're focused on the right thing. This also adds an accessibility element to the app. So, for example, if you couldn't go out into the parks, you could actually do this from home. So you have an idea of what the question is about, then you can go back, answer the question, hit check, and you'll get some sort of feedback. That answer then goes to us, okay, or to the park administrators. So that's an Adventure Track example. As I said, the other two items down below, Citizen Science and Identify, are about maybe getting information from visitors. Identify is a place where you can take a picture and say, what the heck is this? Okay. Citizen Science is more of a focused thing where we might, for example, train people how to identify garlic mustard, an invasive plant, and ask them for help finding where those points are in the park where we see it. That would help our invasive plants crew. So that's Citizen Science is more about kind of mission-driven, you know, things like that. The last one there is My Park Apps. If you click on that, you'll be asked to log in, and you'll see another screen with some additional features. One is record on the map where a user can actually enter their own information, their own points of interest that they're interested in going back to.
So you create your own.
Right, and they can then share those with friends. That's basically something they can look at on the website. The digital badges, every time you do an adventure track, you're given a digital badge. And so, for example, that helps you mark your own accomplishments, but it also helps us to know, hey, that person went through the garlic mustard training. So we can now use them as a garlic mustard volunteer, or encourage them to volunteer with us, you know, in some way. So there's some interesting aspects of badges that we have to explore in the future. And then the last feature is a field notebook, which allows you to take pictures and type notes. And, you know, for example, go back to the web page and have a look at what you've done there. So those are the features on the app itself. There's also a web page which provides some, in addition to providing the way to enter all the points and data, there's also an interesting data analytics component. So this is an example of a heat map showing where people are actually using the app. Right now it's mostly in Kent. And various places around where people live. But in the future, this can be more full-featured. You could select by spatial criteria, you can select by adventure tracks, and by time, and get a sense for how things are going. You can download that information, you can download the answers to people's questions. So those are the aspects of the app that are built into the web page part of it. And I think I'll just stop there and take questions, because the last screen is just to show you that this data entry, or the setup part of it, is all in place and ready to go. And we have a number of adventure tracks in various stages of development. Any questions?
When do you anticipate it becoming fully functional?
It is. All of what you've seen is actually out there now. You can download it just by going to parkapps.kent.edu. And right now it's iOS only. We're working on the Android one. That should be out in the next week or two. Any other questions?
Very good. Thank you. Thank you. It's really interesting. Again, I think over 60% of people are carrying some sort of smart device now, and to see that, you know, it's an education app for exploring parks. It's putting some of that information at the fingertips and then being able to add it. So I'm glad we're in the collaboration with our neighbors to the south and the Cuyahoga Valley, and then certainly Kent State has partnered with us on a number of things. And again, Baldwin Wallace, Cuyahoga Community College, we're continuing to partner with the university systems as part of our core mission. So there is no old business at this point in time.
Do we have any public comments today?
Please. Marty. Several positive things to note. Maybe it took some encouragement, but the new Ford deck is moving right along, and the Fort Hill steps are finally going to open, making both drivers and walkers happy. The addition to Brecksville Nature Center is both needed and welcome. However, it should not substitute for preserving and maintaining the historic building. The Brecksville land acquisition is particularly a nice piece worth protecting. Speaking of protecting, that cyclocross race, which features mud and brags about tearing up the ground. Kirtland Park has little of an environmental significance, but Wendy Park, under the auspices of Metro Parks, should not be subject to that kind of abuse. It puts the lie to your claims of land protection. Efforts to reduce the risk of falling trees seem trivial compared to the threat of concrete falling from a bridge overhead. Though I expect ODOT bears responsibility, I think Metro Parks should show more concern for visitors beyond merely posting a warning. Mesh guards have been used in the past. Why are they not being put up under the Brook Park Bridge? Signs have been posted for some time, but they will do nothing to protect anyone. I visited Timberlane Stables with a horse group this week, and it is extremely nice. Well worth repairs you have done, and a good base for the mounted unit, which have been serving Cleveland so admirably in both celebrations and protests. They do you proud. And you can credit the shortened remarks to being distracted by the Indians. Go try.
All right.
Thank you very much. I believe that we are going to go into an executive session.
Yes. Yes, we're going to ask that.
property as well as some updates on mitigation.
So
moved.
Debbie Berry?
Yes.
Dan Moore?
Yes.
Bruce Springberg?
Yes.
All right, thank you, everybody. We will go to executive session. We will be back to you for closed session.